We're now at a point where we can actually begin to penetrate into the area, the territory of a Christian philosophy. Of all the preliminary material that we've covered so far are to show why that's possible, make it plausible, and now we're right at the door, the entranceway. There are only a couple of things to go over, and then I'm going to show you exactly what we mean when we say that theories are regulated by some divinity belief or other, and that that's the best way to understand what's going on in them. And then to go ahead and say that Christians should be theorizing with their belief in God in that slot of being their divinity belief that regulates their theories. So we're going to start with this idea of the role of divinity beliefs in theories. Let me just show you what I have in mind. In the ancient world, when philosophy first arose, it was invented, as far as we know, by the ancient Greeks. They all started by trying to think of the cosmos as a whole and identify within the cosmos the divine reality that everything else depends on. That's why they start by claiming that it's matter, for example. And then there are debates about the nature of matter. Is it essentially earth, air, fire, water, or atoms? Others wanted to say there is not just one divine principle. There's not one reality that's self-existent. There are two. And it's matter plus, and here they put, logical laws or mathematical laws, or both. Some thinkers thought it was both logic and math, and they called them rational. But at any rate, this is the divine element for them, two elements. These two interact and produce all the rest of the cosmos. That was the strategy for explanation. You want to understand the things in the cosmos? Then first you identify what they all depend on, which is the cause of them all, and then you trace the causal pathways. They can be very indirect. This causes that, causes that, causes that, and then this depends on the divine. Or it can be the divine is thought of as permeating all things. There are all kinds of ways to slice that. But this is the way theories originated. So some 300 years after they originated, Aristotle is still doing that. For example, he says in the Metaphysics, so there really is a science about that which has independent reality and cannot change. And he says, and here, if anywhere, is the divine. Metaphysics 1064b, if you want to know where that is. So he's doing just as his teacher Plato had. For Plato, there's another realm. Remember that? There's another dimension to reality that's filled with perfections. And things in this world imperfectly copy the perfections. Aristotle didn't like that. No, the perfections are in the things that exemplify them. They're not in another realm. So that's an important difference between them, but not crucial to what we're doing right now. I'm pointing out this is what is a strategy for explanation. Find what everything depends on, and then look for the causal pathways of that of those dependencies. In this view, for example, this not only viewed the cosmos as matter plus rational laws, it viewed human beings that way too. In a human being, this is their reason and this is their body. So there's mind or soul and body. And humans are a duality like everything else in the cosmos. So you want to be able to get a glimmer now for how identifying one or two of these sorts of things as divine permeates your understanding of the whole cosmos and of human nature. Of course, when Christians encountered philosophy, philosophy had existed for 500 years, more. And Christians immediately saw that identifying any part of the cosmos as the divinity that generates all the rest of it is not right, not by their lights. It's God. that the cosmos depends on, and the cosmos is all creation, it's all created. Only God is uncreated. They were very clear about that. So they're not about to buy any of these proposals of the previous 500 years. They're going to say, it is God on whom everything, whatever, depends. And and here they could echo the point that I made earlier from Colossians 1. God has created everything, whether visible or invisible. So God is the creator not only of space-time and matter, but of all laws, and so on. And they were clear about that. But, there's a big but here. But, even though this isn't divine, it still could be, many of them thought, that there's something in the cosmos that everything else in the cosmos depends on. This is no longer divine. It doesn't have self-existence. It's created by God. But then everything else depends on that. And that strategy meant that they could keep most of a pagan theory. They could explain, just like the guys who held this stuff 500 years earlier, if they wanted to take a dual view of what's divine, they could say, well, look, let's say it's true that everything is made of matter and subject to logical or mathematical and or mathematical laws. And that's the way you explain all the rest of reality, as the interaction of these two. As long as you add, and God created them, you're okay. What's the matter with that? Why isn't that a Christian view? So we can, all the rest of our explanation can be just like this, and then we can say, oh, but you missed the fact that these two things in turn depend on God. That's your mistake. And these guys will reply, and no, that's your mistake, because the explanation works whether you tack God on in the end or not. And that's just what they did reply. This then becomes a fifth wheel. Right? This way of doing theories doesn't start with God. It starts with theories that are already around that deify some part of the world. And they say, well, as long as we don't deify it, it could still be what everything else depends on. We keep the same strategy for explaining creation and things in creation. We just add, and that in turn depends on God. And with that little formula, we have baptized any theory into Christian respectability. It doesn't make it a Christian theory, but it's acceptable, huh? And I guess you anticipate I'm going to say no, it's not. Because chapter 1 of Colossians not only says that God created everything visible or invisible, it also says that He created everything through Jesus Christ. Everything was created for Him and by Him, and He makes all things hang together. And that's the point that was missed. That if you try to reduce all the rest of creation to these, you explain all the rest by these, and then try to say that it's through these two things that God mediates His power to all creation. Everything depends on God, but these depend directly and everything else is indirectly. They depend on these, and then those in turn depend on God. But then these become a substitute for Jesus Christ, according to Colossians 1. And that, the Eastern Church said, is intolerable. So St. Gregory Palamas says, the Christian can tolerate no mediating substance between God and creatures. But the Western Church bought this lock, stock, and barrel. And so we get Christian Platonism, Christian Aristotelianism, Christian Neoplatonism. We get Christian dualism, Christian rationalism, Christian even materialism. There have been theorists who were Christian who said, oh, I think matter is the essential characteristic of all creation, and that's what God created. But then they are explaining everything within creation by saying it's reducible to, it's caused by, produced by, the purely physical, and that in turn depends on God. And keeping that pagan strategy for theories should be inimical to Christians. They should not accept that. I hope this is clear. It's clear that what I'm going to be arguing for is that not only is there nothing in creation that's divine, there's nothing in creation that everything else in creation depends on other than Jesus Christ. And so when a Christian philosophy starts out, it wants to look at what causal pathways we can trace. What depends on what produces what, how does this work, and so on. In a many-sided way, we're not trying to say that the essential characteristic of all creation is physical, or physical plus logical, physical plus rational, or any of the other substitutes that can be put in here. There is no one overall characterization of all creation, except to depend on God. And it does so directly. So there's going to be a lot more diversity in this ontology. We're going to allow for all the things that we experience as real. And we're going to take them as we experience them and then examine them, see if we can get a better understanding of their natures. And there are going to be many types of them. It's not true that everything in creation is going to be essentially any one thing. But there are types of things that are whose natures are very different from one another. Now, when we're going to take a break, and you're going to think about that, and then we're going to come back, and I want to show you just how theories in mathematics do depend on one's divinity belief. We're going to look at a mathematical formula that you are all familiar with and is not intimidating. It's 1 plus 1 equals 2. We don't have to go any further than that to see the differences among mathematicians as to what it is we're talking about and dealing with when we say 1 plus 1 makes 2, and that there are many different ways to interpret it, and those are in turn controlled by the thinker's divinity belief. That's what's coming up next. So make sure you have a grasp of everything prior. This is why the idea of a Christian philosophy got derailed. This is what undercut it. If you can keep the pagan strategy and explain everything just the same as you would whether you tag God onto the tail of the donkey or not, then what's the difference? For Christians, there's no uniquely Christian philosophy. But if that's forbidden, as I take it to be, by the New Testament, then we've got a new project altogether and a new strategy for explanation. That's what we'll come to next.